Revenue is open. Good morning, everyone. We're going to go a little out of order today and begin with a public hearing on green light, House Bill 2244A. I'll open a public hearing. This bill came to us from the House, but not from the House Revenue Committee. It was the House Economic Development Committee. So it's the first time for a revenue panel. And Mr. Allenette.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Green Light Oregon Rebate Labor Program is a rebate of up to 6.2% of Oregon payroll for productions for production expenses occurring in Oregon. Businesses have to spend at least $1 million in Oregon to qualify. The program has been in place since 2005. And basically, the companies remit the withholding payments to the Department of Revenue, and then when it becomes clear that business has become eligible, the Department of Revenue will transfer the funds to the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Fund. One thing I just want to be clear about is that this is not the tax credit related. Oftentimes, people get those confused. There is a tax credit for contributions that fund the OPIF, the Oregon Production Investment Fund. This is a different program.
Right. Could you explain for some of our newer members how it works?
So businesses, productions will be in Oregon filming, and all of the individuals who are subject to the personal income tax in Oregon, from their paychecks, the businesses will withhold their personal income taxes, and those withholding payments, just like any other business, get sent to the Department of Revenue. And then once those businesses, so then eventually the department collects that money, and then we'll transfer eligible funds into the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Fund that will then be used by the Film and Video Office to make rebates to the businesses. And the businesses eligible for those refunds are those that spend at least $1 million in Oregon. So the whole idea is they're bringing a lot of economic activity to Oregon and helping to create and enhance jobs in Oregon, and then a piece of the personal income taxes go back to the businesses through the Film and Video Office. So it's a net wash in terms of revenue impact. There is a revenue impact statement there. All of the money, the withholding taxes come in and they go to the general fund, and the eligible funds get transferred from the general fund to the Greenlight the Goler Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Fund.
And then the tax credit, by contrast?
The tax credit is sold at auction once a year, and the current cap is, I think, $14 million a year. And so the Department of Revenue, in conjunction with the Film and Video Office, hold a tax credit auction where tax credits are sold at, I think, $500 increments and a minimum bid of 95 cents on the dollar. Typically, they've been right around at a dollar. And when any taxpayer in the state can purchase those tax credits, they'll bid on the tax credit, and they get to claim that on their tax return. So that person doesn't have to have anything to do with the industry. And then those funds are used by the Film and Video Office as incentives to bring projects to help fund production activities in Oregon as well.
Okay. So, Senator Riley.
So, since these go into the general fund before they're distributed, do they count against the kicker?
Correct. They would be their general fund collections. Mm-hmm. So they come in. So for some of the productions, and I think you're going to hear some testimony on this, at the beginning of the year, it may not be clear if certain productions will be eligible because you have to spend $1 million. Mm-hmm. There will be certain productions that are clearly going to blow past that. They're big enough. So the withholding all comes into the Department of Revenue, and that's all part of the general fund collections, and then it gets transferred here. So being part of the general fund, it's part of that baseline forecast.
Yeah.
Senator Taylor?
Thank you, Chair Hassett. Can you just give us some context of dollar-wise, I mean, how much comes into the general fund?
Right now, we're at about $5 million a year for this program. So I'd have to look up, or there might be some information in from the Film and Video Office about total taxes produced, because they had some economic reports done on the program. But related to this particular piece, it's about $5 million a year that come into the general fund that get transferred into this labor rebate fund. And then go back. So in connection with the tax credit, you have $5 million for this, and it's either 12 or $14 million for the credit per year right now.
Senator Taylor.
Well, thank you, Chair Hess. So what benefits are we seeing from, is this working? Is this doing what it was intended to do? I mean, do we have any information to show?
Yes, there have been a couple studies, and I think the Film and Video Office has a presentation okay. they're going to go through. And the whole idea is it helps bring productions to the state, as well as it's not just a matter of the kind of the old style smokestack chasing thing. It's about building a permanent labor force in Oregon, going down to carpenters, painters, caterers, all kinds of locals, and sustaining that labor force in Oregon, as opposed to having bidding on a production to come into the state, be here for a couple of months, and then leave. It's about trying to create a semi-permanent labor force and talent pool in Oregon.
I was just going to say that, at least in for my district, I have to say that it just coincidentally happens to be that a lot of that filming happens, ironically, in Southeast Portland, which is kind of interesting. So I've had the pleasure of going to some of those sets and seeing who they're employing, and Portland is a desirable place for people to live, so they are able to have people here instead of bringing them in from other states. Perhaps Senator Bocas disagrees.
Senator Bocas.
No, actually, a large swath of those 3,000 jobs are in your district. I won't agree or disagree on Portland being a desirable place to live, but I just would point out that this definitely benefits your district, because the Center Mass is that area, that section down in your left hand or your northwestern corner of your district is Center Mass, of where the vast majority of these 3,000 jobs are at, which we'd like to keep, at least some of them, even if it is your district.
Thank you.
Senator Boer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We might not need you guys.
Well, I kind of asked these before, so presentations may change. When you say there's no revenue impact, that's assuming that the 6.5% in payroll taxes is only coming because of the jobs. So therefore, the rebate of it back to the business is a $5 million revenue, but we're taking away from payroll taxes and giving that back to the business owners.
Right.
So I would disagree that there is a $5 million impact. We could argue if the job didn't come, you right. wouldn't have the income, but we could argue that with a lot of things. The second part of it is the Measure 97 talked about corporations not paying taxes. Things like this tax credit, where they're buying those, and in this case the money's going to some other, it decreases their taxes in the state of Oregon. The Betsy credits are a great example of that. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that these are at 95% or plus, because the Betsy credits are actually allowing corporations to make money by leveraging the purchases.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's reason for that. That's a different issue for another day.
Yeah, no, I just
sit right there.
So I wanted to follow up on what he was saying about the revenue impact. Isn't it not a revenue impact because we're already doing it's already current law? And this does not change current law. Isn't that why there's no revenue impact?
No, the bill extends the program 6 years. The rebate program okay. sunsets, and so the bill makes a couple of other little or other changes, but the primary change is it extends the program for 6 years. When I said it had no revenue impact, it was in the context of, say, for an example, the tax credit. If we had the tax credit here, that would be a revenue impact of about $14 million a year, because that's a write-off, so there'd be a revenue loss of $14 million a mm-hmm. year. On this program, as shown in the revenue impact statement, there's a revenue loss to the general fund of about $5 million a year, but then there's a gain to this other fund of about $5 million a year.
Oh, so it's our fund?
Yeah, right.
It's a state fund, okay.
So that's the context.
It's us. We're the enemy.
They give it away. Hey, we don't.
The enemy. So that's the context for the no revenue impact. There is another line there of a revenue impact of about $500,000 a year, because these rebates that go back to the businesses, if they are included in, under federal law, they would be considered taxable income. So ostensibly the businesses, that when they receive a rebate, if they get a $1 million rebate, they would include that in their federal taxable income. That would flow through to Oregon, and then we subtract that from the tax return. So there is that other nuance to a revenue impact.
Okay. Tim Williams.
Thank you, Chair Haas, Vice Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim Williams. I am the Executive Director of Oregon Film and Video Office, or Oregon Film. This is an overview of the economic development and other work we've been doing over the fiscal year 2015 and 2016 with the data beyond that, specifically data associated with the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Program, which, as you know, is addressed in HB 2244A. Oregon Film is a four-person, semi-independent agency which promotes the Oregon creative content industry both in-state and out-of-state. We look to heighten the profile of Oregon in all creative outlets with a view towards indigenous company growth and job creation. Oregon Film also manages the Oregon Production Investment Fund, or OPIF, as well as the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Program. As part of the larger OPIF program, we also manage a smaller fund for indigenous projects called IOPIF, which focuses on in-state projects being sourced and produced by Oregon creators and companies with an Oregon-drawn crew. In addition to the above, we are also launching a new program which encourages more regional-based productions with a small financial incentive. This program is called ROPIF and will come into effect on July 1, 2017. For the fiscal year 2015-2016, the OPIF fund was capped at $10 million. This amount rose to $12 million in the 2016-2017 fiscal year. And as Mr. Allenek pointed out, it rises to $14 million in the 2017-2018 fiscal year. The Greenlight Oregon program adds to this industry's overall growth pattern, but in a way which is both complementary and augmentative to the OPIF programs. Greenlight not only adds an additional labor incentive of up to 6.2 to projects spending more than $1 million in the state, it can also be utilized by production companies to grow their in-state commercial production businesses. It is the only incentive program we have which can specifically utilize to increase local commercial production. In the fiscal year 2015-2016, Greenlight on its own paid out $1 million in incentives to eight different commercial companies, which generated $20 million in labor and supported 500 full-time jobs, producing more than 300 commercial campaigns. For the fiscal year 2015-2016, the Greenlight Fund rebated an aggregate amount of about $5 million to projects and companies working here in Oregon. This year, Oregon Film commissioned two economic development surveys, one from the Community Service Center at the University of Oregon and the second from the Northwest Economic Research Center at PSU. These surveys were specifically designed to look into incentivized productions and producers who have interacted with our office and these programs. These reports are available on our website and also on OLIS. I'd like to highlight a conclusion from the PSU report. Productions that worked with Oregon Film Office hired the equivalent of 1,847 jobs on average during each of the last 4 years. A wide majority of these jobs were filled by Oregon residents, 84% on average. Due in large part to the indigenous animation, commercial, and interactive game subsectors, which hire almost exclusively Oregon residents. In addition to the jobs provided directly by businesses in question, the indirect and induced impacts of this industry actively supports another 1,652 jobs elsewhere in the Oregon economy. Likewise, the resulting income paid to Oregon workers averaged $149 million per year, $93.5 million paid directly to media productions, and another $55 million supported indirectly by industry activity and consumer purchases. Total value added by the industry within the Oregon economy for incentivized productions, including multiplier effects, averaged $193 million per year. The other report was based on a survey and interviews conducted by the U of O's Community Service Center. 78 of the respondents reported that incentives increased the number of employees that they hired for their projects. In addition, the survey data showed that the largest share of expenditures are on labor, and there is a considerable variation of expenditure beyond that. Most of the Oregon businesses surveyed plan to expand their businesses in the future with the help of the Oregon Film incentives. The results suggest that at least for businesses that receive incentive, the programs help to expand their operations in ways that may not be possible without these programs. I wanted to give a quick example of the overall impact of these projects being attracted by these programs via the feature film Lean on Pete. Lean on Pete stars Steve Buscemi and Chloe Sevigny and is based on a book by Oregon author Willie Vlauten. During the months of August to October of 2016, Lean on Pete utilized the Greenlight Oregon Rebate Program in order to shoot in North Portland, Malala, and Harney County. and engaged more than 125 vendors in 30 House districts and 20 Senate districts, having an impact on more than half of the legislative map. It employed 220 local cast and crew members and 415 background actors, and it spent more than $100,000 in hotel expenses in Harney County alone. When the movie is released, we will work with our partners at places like Travel Oregon to ensure that this film helps to continue the overall marketing of Oregon, especially in the scenic locations that it captured in Burns and Harney County. The other interesting growth pattern that we've seen is the local animation sector. Led by award-nominated and winning work of Laika, Oregon is now home to many world-class animation studios providing full-time creative jobs with good salaries. The state now has become a destination for high-caliber animation talent, and it continues to expand its workforce and creative output. In the past year alone, Oregon-made animation projects have won awards and invented new animation techniques, leading Laika Studios to become only the second animation facility in history to be nominated for a Visual Effects Academy Award. This is a long slide. It's its Best Animated Feature nomination, as well as its British Academy Award nomination. Other Oregon name brands like House Special, Bent Image Lab, and Hinge Digital are consistently recognized for both their creative work and workforce. On their own, these companies annually employ more than 450 people and generate more than $70 million in direct economic activity. I wanted to highlight a specific outcome of the Greenlight Oregon program. Shadow Machine is an award-winning animation company that relocated to Portland during 2015 due in large part to the animation talent pool which now exists in Oregon and the Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate Program. They now employ 30 to 50 people on a full-time basis and have a 20,000-square-foot permanent studio in northwest of the city. Their most recent series for Comedy Central, Jeff and Some Aliens, is completely produced here in Oregon using a local workforce. In 2016, Time magazine listed an episode from Shadow Machine's original series, BoJack Horseman, as a number one rated episode of 2016. And sadly, this January marked the end of production for the NBC series Grimm. After 6 years and 123 episodes, all based in Oregon, Grimm filmed its final episode in Estacada and Happy Valley in an ice storm in mid-January. This remarkable series not only added to Oregon's marketing perception around the world, it also provided 300 jobs on a year-to-year basis and directly spent $300 million here in the state. On top of that, the dedicated cast was so invested in Oregon that they annually hosted a large fundraiser for the world-renowned Dornbecker Children's Hospital, raising more than $800,000 this year in 3 hours for more than $1.5 million over the last 3 years for a program they started called the Grimster Endowment to support families of children being treated at Dornbecker. We are now working hard to find a replacement for or replacements for Grimm, and the Greenlight Oregon program will be a very big tool to do that. As a recap, every year, Greenlight is utilized by indigenous production companies as a competitive growth tool, which has led to permanent digital content and commercial industry here in the state. In addition, it can be used as a recruiting tool to bring companies from outside Oregon into the state when looking for a deep and experienced local workforce. Now, after several years of steady growth and with the conclusion of Grimm after 6 years, and later this year, Portlandia after 8 years, we face a time when Oregon's creative content industry is looking for new opportunities. With more than 30 other states offering in the majority more lucrative film and TV incentive programs, we will be using all of the tools at our disposal to make sure our industry continues its growth and stability here in Oregon. The Greenlight Oregon program is very much part of one of these tools, especially since it leads to full-time year-round jobs. Greenlight is scheduled to sunset at the end of this calendar year, and House Bill 2244A would extend that sunset a further 6 years. In addition, House Bill 2244A also allows our office to take up to a 1% deduction from the Greenlight rebate amount awarded to a company to help fund our own educational and workforce development programs, which we are actively working to develop. Thank you, Chair Haas, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee. I'd be happy to answer your questions at this time.
Thank you. That's a good presentation. I noticed that there were some changes from the original bill. I think we talked one time, and you were looking at sporting events or some of those, but then the committee in the House said no.
Chairman Haas, we took out that provision because, number one, it didn't seem like this was the session to do that. Number two, it didn't seem like this was the bill to do that. And number three, it was not working in the way we wanted to work it. And I think it is a discussion to have about large-scale broadcast sporting events and whether or not there is a program to help those. But I think that should be a conversation separate and apart from this program at this time.
Okay. it feels like, at least in the metro area, there is becoming there's a critical mass of people who get up every morning, go to work, and they're painters and carpenters, like Chris said, and that's almost year round, and that feels pretty good. It feels like that's where we wanted to get to, so that there wouldn't be hit and miss, and half the year you go to Los Angeles, or half the year you don't work. So where do things sit? I guess I'm asking you for sort of a state of the union in your industry. If we lose these two TV shows for those people who got up every day and went to work and painted sets and held light kits.
Chair Haas, the loss of Grimm is a concern. It's a very big 22-episode, 9-month employment machine that was here for 6 years, and being able to replace it in the current market that is not making that kind of product anymore is a big trick. Having said that, just this week we actually announced an HBO project that's coming into town, and I hope next week I'm going to announce another series that's going to be coming into town alongside of that. The Librarians is coming back for season 4. Portlandia, as I said, is here for season 8. We have a feature film shooting right now in town. So what I see is sort of the state of the union is we do have the workforce here. My job and my office's job is to try to make sure there's opportunities for them to stay here permanently for as long as we can do that. I think we're going to see a drop in the longevity of the single project workforce because Grimm went for so long and was doing so many episodes. But I'm hopeful that we can put in other smaller projects that are now being made. So instead of 22 episodes, the industry is now making 10 episodes and 12 episodes with Amazon and Hulu and Netflix rather than these very large CBS, NBC 22-episode series. So what we're looking at is, can we find two or three of those 10 episodes, 12 episodes to replace the one big one that we're losing? And I think over the next year or two, we will be able to do that. But I think we will have a couple of years of shifting numbers.
Thank you. Senator Buckwitz?
No, I'm fine.
Another question, Senator Riley?
Thank you. I, of course, am interested in LICA since it's in my district. And one of the things I learned about them is that they were doing one project, and that meant that for a long period they had a lot of people working, and then for a long period they didn't have anybody working. My understanding is they're doubling their space and doing two projects overlapping so that all of their people continue to work year-round. Is that still happening?
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, yes. I believe they're coming to the end of that capital construction, and they are planning on doing at least two productions simultaneously. One of the other things, the good things I'm seeing about this animation growth with the other companies in town is one of the things we've helped facilitate is intercommunication between the companies. And places like Shadow Machine have come into this ecosystem, and they are trying to scale up when like our Bent Image Lab is scaling down so that the workforce actually it works freelance, but it moves around. Leica's new expansion, I think, is going to keep a lot more people there a lot more permanently. But I actually think the ecosystem is big enough for that. And the companies that are doing other animated projects have established their own workflow that is going on a year-round basis as well. So that's one of the things I'm actually very encouraged about with the animation scene here is led by Leica and the amount of work they're doing in the workforce they have. We're seeing a really great creative force that's now available to other animation companies that are utilizing it and growing at the same time.
Senator Taylor? All right, appreciate your work and your testimony today.
Thank you very much.
Terry Walton, and did you want to come up with a team or you come up yourself? Yes.
Good morning, Chair Haas and members of the Senate, Revenue Committee. My name is Terry Walton. I'm the Director of Production at R2C Group in Portland, Oregon. R2C Group is a unique company in that we're an advertising agency, a production company, and a media buying company, which employs about 100 people. Personally, I have been involved in the film community in the state of Oregon for since 1988, so nearly 30 years, the last 13 of which have been as a is on staff at R2C Group. And it's with great honor and privilege to have been a part of this growing community, the film community, and to watch it grow. And I hope to continue to see it grow. So the founder of our company, R2C Group, has written a letter, and I'd like to share it with the committee today because I feel it's very important, and she feels that being a recipient of the green light rebate is an important part of our business. Dear members of the House of Representatives.
Who are you referring to here, Terry?
Michelle Cardinal wrote a letter, and it's been submitted. My name is Michelle Cardinal, and I am the CEO of R2C Group based in Portland. I'm writing to request your support of HB 2244A for the Green Light Oregon Labor Rebate. I founded my company in 1998, and we are now the second largest advertising agency in the state of Oregon and one of the largest producers of TV commercials in the country. In 2016, R2C Group produced 23 national television campaigns, of which 19 were filmed in the state of Oregon. The Greenlight Oregon Labor Rebate has had a significant positive impact on ours and many other businesses, the Oregon film community and production community, and the state of Oregon itself, including large productions drive brand awareness for Oregon. The Greenlight has not only attracted large TV productions to the state from its nationally known TV shows, Grimm, Portlandia, Librarians, and Leverage, but these shows have created free national media for the state, generating massive positive brand awareness and driving tourism to the state. This benefits not only the production community, but also the travel and tourism industry and economy here at home. TV industry expertise in Oregon creates jobs. Attracting world-class production talent to our community has resulted in bringing more experienced and talented resources for our agency and resulted in training existing legacy employees in a new craft. These top-notch resources have contributed to the quality of our commercial work and bring nationally known companies as our clients, Humana Healthcare, Bissell, Microsoft, Kimberly-Clark, and others to the state to do business. Keep jobs in Oregon. More local production resources allow us to shoot and produce more commercials in the state of Oregon instead of having to go to cities such as Los Angeles or Vancouver, Canada. Small businesses prosper. R2C Group films all over the state of Oregon, such as on the coast, the Gorge, Central Oregon, Mount Hood, Clackamas River, enabling small businesses to thrive and prosper. This includes shooting in state and city parks, to which we pay permit fees, utilizing services such as restaurants, hotels, local merchants for art direction and wardrobe, as well as equipment providers providing lighting, sound, and videography. Thriving freelance community. Because of Greenlight, my company and many others are a major employer of production freelancers, as well as full-time creative and production staff. I would like to ask for your continued support of HB 2244A so that the Oregon film and production community can continue to thrive and agencies like R2C Group can benefit from the diversity and depth of film resources here in Oregon, which in turn supports our local economy. Sincerely, Michelle Cardinal, CEO and founder, R2C Group.
Gentlemen.
Good morning, Chair Haas and members of the committee. My name is Javier Baltazar. I'm the owner of Mundo Catering. We cater for the film industry. I've been owner for the last past 6 years. In the beginning, I only have six employees. And now I have 20 employees, which half of the employees were worried about what was going to happen this year because the end of Grimm. And the beginning of this month, I was able to call back every single one, and I'm working on three different productions right now. And I have a meeting with one of the other producers with the potential to hire 10 more people by the end of this month. And I'm just here to try to support the film industry so we can continue growing my business and be able to hire some more people. I supporting more local businesses like farmers and even including cash and carry. We spend a lot of money and a lot of time on those businesses and just here to support the film industry. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Chair Haas, members of the committee. I'm Don Rohrbacher. I own PD Expendables Stage and Studio Supplies. We supply equipment and sell supplies for film and theater production. I grew up in Lake Oswego, but went to college and began my career in Los Angeles, as so many of us do in this business. But in 1990, I was able to return to Oregon and worked for various film equipment rental houses. In 2014, because of our strong film economy, I was finally able to start my own company. My clients include shows such as Portlandia, The Librarians, studios like Leica, House Special, Shadow Machine, numerous small companies like myself that also supply to our industry, Freelance Crew, which books my stuff. This strong base of income from film has allowed me to expand. My other clients include people such as Oregon Coast Aquarium, Oregon Ballet Theater, Portland Opera, colleges such as Portland Community College, Clackamas Community College. And to supply these people, I work not only with national vendors, but also local vendors. I get my pipe from Alaskan Copper and Brass, rope from Continental Western, and just about everything else from Winx Hardware. Greenlight works for me in this way, as it creates a positive environment for commercials in particular, which my freelancers tend to work on more than the films. The freelancers book the gear from me, they go to work for R2, and we all prosper from the opportunity presented from incentives such as Greenlight. So it's been an honor to speak on behalf of suppliers such as myself. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's, I think, gratifying to hear from people other than the movie stars, because that, to me, this is what this has always been about. It's the caterers and the grips and the gappers and the suppliers and the vendors. The questions of this panel? Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much. I don't see anyone else signed up to testify on this bill. So we will close down our public hearing on this. Thank you all for coming to this. And we will return to the less glamorous world of technical revenue finance and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2279. Kyle.
Okay, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2279 does cover the glamorous world of property appraiser classifications.
Yes, almost the same.
Nearly identical, really. An important note before I'll describe the bill is the changes to the property appraiser classification relate to appraisers in the property tax system, not to appraisers outside the property tax system. So this is not all appraisers at large, but just those that are appraising property related to ad valorem property taxation. But so what House Bill 2279 would do is it consolidates the appraiser classifications, which there are three of right now, into a single property appraiser classification, and it eliminates in many ways the responsibilities that are held by DAS right now and then transfers those responsibilities in a similar, somewhat similar structure over to Department of Revenue. It does require Department of Revenue is then required to register and appraise, to register the appraisers and then to prepare and conduct and grade the appraiser examinations. And it does require the Department of Revenue to set the education and experience requirements to sit for the appraiser examination as well. There is some background information in the SMS, but I believe Department of Revenue will be covering a lot of the same information. So in an effort not to duplicate that information, I'll just we'll leave it there, I believe, for the background.
Okay. Questions of Kyle? Mark Garst.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Oregon Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. Before you today, we have two bills that were brought by the governor on behalf of the department. Both of these bills passed the House unanimously. So first up is House Bill 2279, and Kyle explained what it does. It consolidates the authority for the registration and monitoring of education experiences at the Department of Revenue. Currently, this work is shared between DAS and the department, but as a practical matter, we're doing almost all the work at the department through a memorandum of understanding. Time to time, we will send a name to the to DAS and say, this person has taken the exam and they've passed. Please issue them a certificate that they're a registered appraiser. DAS will print the certificate and send it to the person. And then again, every once in a while, we'll send them something that says, this person has not completed their education requirements. Please revoke their registration. And DAS will do that. And that's really what DAS's role is at this point. And we've worked with them for 2 years and the Appraisers Education Committee to create this bill to kind of bring it all into revenue. Kyle also mentioned that it will eliminate three classes of appraisal registration. There's a 1, 2, and 3 currently. The difference is basically experience hours, but as a practical matter, it doesn't make much difference what your actual appraisal registration is as far as the type of work that you're allowed to do. It does create a little consternation now and again when somebody gets the Appraiser 3 registration through the Department of Revenue, but they're still an Appraiser 2 at their county, and they want the Appraiser 3 pay if they're in a registered Appraiser 3, but that's just really not how it works. It's completely divorced from that. And then the final thing that it does is it eliminates this requirement, obsolete requirement for general knowledge exam. It refers to the DAS personnel division, which no longer exists, and also the test that it refers to, this general knowledge exam, no longer exists. We've worked with the assessors to set what the criteria are for someone to become a trainee. We've set up a curricula, and then the county coaches the person, and then they let us know that they have completed the trainee program. The person sits for the test, and that's how they get the appraisal registration. So so that's basically the bill in a nutshell. Once somebody gets registered, they have to have 60 hours of continuing education in the first 2 years, and then 30 hours of continuing education every 2 years after that. And that's something the department currently monitors and will continue to monitor. And most of that training is put on also by the Department of Revenue. So that is our appraiser registration concept. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mark. I did not hear you say there would be any issues with workload or...
No, Chair Haas, because the department's currently doing all this work through a memorandum of understanding, it's not going to increase our workload whatsoever.
Okay.
So,
okay. Questions of Mark Garst?
Certainly.
Senator Boquist.
Problem with technical bills is they're sometimes too technical. I grasp the consolidate to your agency. That's perfectly fine. You'll recall we've had a discussion on other bills regarding assessors and appraisal qualifications. And we've decided that, you know, assessors are different than appraisers. You know, and the assessors can, you know, do taxes, but they can't do market value. And then we've also had other testimony you've been involved in here, at least during the interim, and I'm not sure we got it here so far in this session, in regards to the fact that the new assessor education and the new assessor qualifications have sort of made a shortage, which has driven up the cost of, you know, assessing and put assessing in, you know, in a longer time frame, and also become some problematic for, you know, the purchase of homes and financing, so on and so forth. So if we're eliminating the general knowledge exam, we're consolidating the three tiers into one tiers, how does this impact the qualifications of assessors and appraisers, and how does this impact the known shortage of assessors, which are causing the cost of assessments to like double and to be extended out over a longer period of time?
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, so there's kind of two worlds out there that exist. One of them are these registered appraisers, which are the only thing that they're really allowed to do is to do appraisal for property tax assessments. They can testify in tax court on the real market value of property, but that's really the limitation of their work. They cannot... The license that we grant does not allow people to do any kind of appraisal for bank financing, say. Those are typically called fee appraisers, and they're actually registered by the Appraisal Certification and Licensure Board. And those are the folks, and I mean, they work with federal agencies, but those are the folks who set the standards, which you're referring to, as far as the requirements for what they call a, I believe it's a licensed appraiser, And then there's a licensed residential appraiser, a certified residential appraiser, and then there's a certified general appraiser. And I definitely have heard the conversation. I myself am actually a certified general appraiser inactive through the Appraisal Certification and Licensure Board. And it was a lot of work to get that license. And I know that conversation has been going on not just in Oregon but at a national level. And I think that there was an there are better people to ask than me because I haven't been following it as closely since I've come to the department. But I think that they actually eliminated the requirement for a certified residential appraiser to have a bachelor's degree recently because they were having so much trouble getting folks into that field. But a lot of it is that you have to work under an appraiser before you can become an appraiser. And so it's kind of it's a lot of family business there, actually. So this will not affect that.
So if we're going to consolidate, rather from DOR and DAS, why wouldn't we consolidate to the board and try and standardize, you know, the assessors and the appraisers?
That conversation would have to occur way above.
Your pay grade, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a federal, there are federal requirements for real estate appraisers that are brought on mostly as a result of the SNL scandals. So it used to be the Wild West for what real estate appraisers, who could call themselves a real estate appraiser. But after the SNL bailout, they put a lot of restrictions on who could actually call themselves a real estate appraisal for any federally funded real estate transaction. But again, this bill, our folks are not allowed to do that kind of bank work. This is specifically for folks who work on property taxes.
Well, Mr. Chair.
And we used to be the Wild West for ghost towns, which changed yesterday.
And he couldn't even name a single ghost town.
Chair Hass, Senator Boquist, the one that we've actually had the most issues with is Greenhorn, just so you know.
Is what?
Greenhorn.
Greenhorn.
Yes.
I do know where Greenhorn is. Okay, that's near Bourne, too, so we got that. The bill says that, you know, the department shall set educational and experience requirements for the examination, and there's references in here to the 100-question test. But it sounded like you were eliminating the 100-question tests and were dumbing down the assessors or appraisers versus professional developing them up. So you lost me on the intent. The bill does say the department shall set educational experience requirements for the examination. And I think you referenced that there wasn't really an examination.
Chair Hass, Senator Boquist, so in order to sit for the exam through DAS, you are supposed to take, if you don't have a bachelor's, you're supposed to take a general knowledge exam. Mm-hmm. And that test no longer is maintained by DAS. But there's another test, which is actually the test that you have to sit for to become a registered appraiser. And we've actually been working on that test. We've made some significant improvements to it recently. It used to be a 100-question test, and you know, if you'd seen it, you'd seen it. It was the same test every time. We created a pool of 300 questions now. We're doing it electronically, so it randomly selects questions from certain groups. And so, we're actually trying to kind of boost up the standards a little bit. And then also education of appraisers is one of the biggest responsibilities of the Property Tax Division, and we take it very seriously. We've been working with the Assessor's Education Committee. We're going to start a week-long appraisal school, actually, here shortly. And it'll give folks from all around the state an opportunity to come and take a good number of these early intro-level classes all at the same time. Additionally, we bring in instructors from the Appraisal Institute, from the IAAO, the International Association of Assessing Officers. I think I missed that wrong. But the Assessor's Office Association. And then also the machinery and equipment specialists, we bring in classes and put classes on for those folks as well. So we take education of county appraisers very seriously.
So really the examination that's being let is the pretest for the examination.
True.
The test to prepare for the test.
True.
Sounds like you guys work too much with higher ed.
Mark, it's probably tangential to this bill, but anybody who's tried to sell or buy a house this last year knows about the shortage of appraisers, and it lengthens the closing time and caused some fail sales. And how will this consolidation help with that? Will we get more people on the job, or is it just two separate issues?
Yeah, Chair Hass, it will neither help or hurt. I also bought a house recently, and it was 6 weeks. yes, is what I got quoted. And some of my folks back from the private sector, they're doing rush appraisals. Mm-hmm. You can get an appraisal in 2 or 3 days, but it'll cost you about $2,000 is what I heard. So that adds considerably to closing costs.
Yep.
Gouging.
No further questions? Okay, thank you. I'm going to close that public hearing and go hold that then for now. And I will open up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2280.
Okay, Mr. Chair, House Bill 2280 is a bill that comes to you from the Department of Revenue as well, and it is repealing ORS 308.325. ORS 308325, it was relating to a certificate of assessment to the person assessed. So it's in the background of the SMS. What the statute reads is any person that was assessed for any year may demand of the assessor an official certificate of that fact. Upon the refusal of the assessor to give the certificate, the assessor shall be fined $100 to be collected by the person demanding the certificate in an action in the name of the party injured before any justice of the peace in the county. So this maybe dovetails with a little bit of the Wild West comments.
Yeah.
Just for further background, there is statute right now, 311-250, that does require the county tax collector to deliver or mail before October 25th the tax statement for the property. And then in addition to that, a number of counties make the property tax statements available on their website as well. So these statements are out there and available under current law.
Mark Arst.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, again, Mark Arst with the Department of Revenue. One of the jobs of the Department of Revenue is to go through the statutes, and when we see something that is either obsolete or in conflict with other statutes, we bring it to your attention. This both definitely meets both of those. This statute was passed in 1907, and at that time, if you bring forward the value of a dollar today, this was about a $2,457 fine that a taxpayer could charge to the assessor. So it was a very hefty fine. We have a little bit more robust property tax system now. You get a tax statement every year that's part of the system. Many counties have a website where you can go and look up just this type of information on their website. If they don't, some of the smaller counties are not on their systems are not networked, but you can go into their office, and often they have a computer in the lobby, or the assessor will help you to get that information. So all the information that's asked for here is actually available. And the statute actually conflicts with ORS 305-410, which gives the Oregon Tax Court sole, exclusive, and final judicial authority over the questions of law and fact arising out of the tax laws of the state. So this bill references the justice of the peace, but they're really not involved today. So with that, happy to take any questions.
Questions? Senator Boquist.
Okay, so I got 325 basically means, you know, we can't find the assessor because the information's already there. I got that one. That's repealed. We're not repealing the statement, though, right? 250? Because you put in the background here, you know, Kyle, 311-250, which is we're still going to mail people their statement and say, hey, this is your taxes. Get ready to be braced on election day, right?
Yes, Senator, that remains unchanged. I'd put that there just to give reference to what is required under current law to actually give these statements. So it'd probably be unnecessary that someone would need to demand it.
Right. Mr. Chair, I would point out that as Mark has said, you know, many of these are available electronically, but then there are some of them where they're not available electronically, and I even have one of my counties to go get the copy. You can easily get it as long as you bring your $25 with you. So. But I suppose this really, the only thing this really does is, you know, revokes the $100 fine, right, Kyle?
That is correct, yes.
Right. Okay. No further questions. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, sir.
Committee, we're in a work session here.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2280 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2280 to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator DeBoer?
Aye.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Yeah.
Chair Hass?
Hass votes aye. Senator Riley, we're back to you. Would you carry this bill?
Sure, why not?
Riley will carry.
Love getting rid of dead wood.
We're repealing laws up here. That's what we do. Okay, that clears our agenda. We will be back on Monday at 8:30. Until then, we are adjourned. 30. Until then, we are adjourned.